Okay, Greg Wilson.
All right. How's this microphone? Can everybody hear me in the back? Okay, thank you, Kathy. A minute ago, they stated my title was a feeding reproductive behavior of two isolated lineages. What I want to clarify is we're going to discuss the global haplotypes, which are a little bit similar, but I changed the title over the past few months after gaining some more insight into my pests. Like you said, my name is Greg Wilson. I'm a graduate assistant for Dr. David Kearns, formerly of Louisiana State University, for the Department of Entomology at the Macon Ridge Research Station, where this research was conducted between 2015 and 2016. To give some fundamental background to cotton producers and those who might choose sorghum in their rotation, you might want to be aware of a new pest on the scene. Its name is sugarcane aphid. I know that's confusing because it's on sorghum, but this pest is from the family Aphididae. It's a phloem feeder. They reproduce asexually, in which rapidly produces the female forms or haploid clones. To give you a brief idea of what that looks like, with our average numbers or mean generations of 30 to 40 nymphs per generation, the time to adult of 5 days, and a reproductive period of 15 to 20 days, this is a very rapid pest that can cause devastating damage quite quickly. That is a 10-second elapsed time of a population. This map was taken, and I have used it in many, many lectures, and I'm very appreciative of the department that published this, which is at the bottom. Friends from Reunion Island, France, have shown that globally, there's at least 5 different gene groups of sugarcane aphid. At least, we say, because current research is showing that there may be even more. What I want you to notice is the multilocus lineages, which actually represent geographical haplotypes or individual types that have grown and developed and evolved over time based on geography. We have 5 major colors here, and I was going to use this map to try to determine its distribution during my literature review, and I came to some interesting discoveries. So what I'm going to do is show you the evolution of the sugarcane aphid and its actual progression across the world. Initially discovered in 1897, arguably, there's also people who said they discovered it earlier, but they didn't publish it in time. First published in 1897, discovered in Java on sugarcane. What I want you to notice is the yellow star that's over Indonesia. What that represents is the center of origin for sugarcane. What I want you to look in Africa are the black stars. That represents the center of origin for sorghum species and most Penicetums. As we progress to the next few slides, you're going to see the yellow triangle representing sugarcane, and you're going to see black X's representing sorghum. What I did is during my literature review is identify the date from a publication, took the host the sugarcane aphid was reported on and location, and marked it on my map. So for 50 years, we'll say from 1899 to 1948, sugarcane aphid is mostly isolated in these areas and regions. What you'll see over the next few slides is you'll see some red arrows that will show you new invasions of the species. I believe the species was initially transported by man aboard clonal nodes of sugarcane. This is most logical because during the Greater Indies and West Indies trading route, sugarcane was not as carefully observed like our micropropagation, and so therefore, many pests could have been easily occupied these clones that were transferred globally. At the end of this period, this is based upon my literature review, certain haplotypes emerged which started to rapidly destroy sorghum in China, India, and Japan, which eventually were dispersed through their winged morph form through regional weather events and subtropical trade winds. This is a very important time period for sugarcane aphid. During this decade, Africa generated at least 6 scientific publications. And in Africa during this period, there was the first congress of the Journal of the Entomological Society of Southern Africa, which the sugarcane aphid was a topic. India and China also generated at least 5 publications, with Japan publishing at least 7 for Melanophis sacchari or Melanophis sorghi under Aphis sorghi and Aphis sacchari. During this time was lots of confusion within the literature upon what this pest was because of its rapid onset. We also had some new introductions in Iraq and in Israel. During this 22-year period, it was very calm, a little bit of spreading. Research was still going on within these regions, trying to manage the populations using a fully integrated approach. What I want you to notice now is I've filled in the circles. Those colors now have the host, which was where the sugarcane aphid was collected and sampled, and what their haplotype turned out to be. What you'll notice is that the sugarcane in haplotype C and in haplotype D were the primary hosts of which that the aphid was on. Well, in E, A, those were major areas of where sorghum was reported to be destroyed by Melanophus saccharae. What you'll also notice is that in the region of the United States, we have no idea what's going on throughout the rest of the world regarding the sorghum aphid or the sugarcane aphid. During 2012, there was passed a significant trade wind activity, three specifically, Hurricane Ernesto, Tropical Storm Florence, and Tropical Storm Helen blew directly from the western Africa over the Atlantic and into the Caribbean. As well, during July 2012, the largest dust storm on record was recorded, and here is a wonderful image showing a potential route for haplotype A, which we looked at earlier, that had developed and destroyed sorghum in Africa. Over the past 4 years, sorghum has been destroyed repeatedly and consistently by the sugarcane aphid. Without constant scouting and just timeless effort towards this pest, we're losing a very valuable crop that is very important to cattlemen and to feed, human feed. MLL-A&E are historically known to cause a 50 to 100% loss at harvest due to feeding and mechanical failure because of the large populations clogging up combines. Whereas B, C, and D are more known to attack sugarcane and occupy wild sorghum forms and have been more important to a virus vector. I found that information out by contacting sugarcane consultants in Australia and in Hawaii and via email in Indonesia, seeing if sorghum was being destroyed by their populations of sugarcane aphid. So my thesis, this is actually some of the paragraphs taken from the thesis that I'm working on right now. We're trying to address specific concerns from publications from scientists globally to address the need to assess the role of anisogenesis and colonization in genotypic reaction against Melanophus saccharae. They want to do this so that we can identify roles and lines with different mechanisms of resistance to this pest, which is very important. And the data and identity, origin, and biological cycle of the Melanophus saccharae complex currently are insufficient, contradictory, and they recommend characterization of species or biotypes, host transfer, and range of host plants. I say that specifically because they have been arguing Melanophus sorghi, Melanophus saccharae for 30 years. We need to clarify some of the actual host behaviors of different haplotypes now that they're known. Our lab is focusing on at least two different haplotypes, running a series of tests, primarily three tests that have been utilized to identify biotypes within the green bug and within the Russian weed aphid and other similar pests. First test that we conducted in serial in order to get the proper answers was a very large and lengthy no-choice examination. Using five columns with the one isolated haplotype A that is known, it was identified during genetic analysis by our friends at Auburn. We looked at 54 species over time at the third true leaf stage by infesting with 200 aphids. Population counts and phytotoxicity scores were taken at 1, 7, 14, and 21 days. 1 to 9 representing no damage, 9 representing death, taken by the Webster method. We utilized a proclimix, species read by Iceland, in order to analyze it. The next test we ran was the anisogenesis test, which is another word and fancy word for non-preference, which means that the aphid just doesn't like that grass. What we did is we put hosts in rows within a closed container, fill that container with sorghum isolates by shaking 250 aphids inside the box lid, closing the lid and taping it up and seeing where they go. We'll take population counts and damage scores at 1 to 9, again, with 1 to 9, at 4 different time points. However, these time points are a little bit different than normal. We take the first two at 2 and 7 days after infestation in order to see where they go immediately. And then the last two spores are taken at two different time points based upon what the aphid damage or feeding damage or injury. Whenever the first row average biotoxicity score reaches 7 to 8 is when we took our next. And then when the second row average was 7 to 8, we took our next scores and populations. The third test we conducted that kind of show that there is preference was a reproductive behavior experiment. By isolating a single plant within these containers using the computer fan, kilogram of soil, and screened with water and tanglefoot at the base, we were able to fully enclose a universe and do a reproductive test of individual aphids. We monitored the reproduction of individual Apteris aphids daily from birth until death, and again analyzed with the proc limits. Some initial results I'd like to show you today. Here's the reproductive behavior results, which utilizing the mean nymph for generation and then generation time, we're able to calculate doubling time and intrinsic rates of growth, with intrinsic rate of increase being very important to ecologists. As you can see, we have significant differences between our susceptible sorghum bicolor and our sugarcane, noting that this sugarcane is a highly susceptible form, which was only found during extensive scouting efforts in order to find susceptible germplasm. 40 mean nymph per generation, 6-day generation time, 3-day doubling time. It's a rapidly onsetting pest of devastating proportion. Some other significant outcomes for haplotype A. The results from our no-choice anisonosis test show that sugarcane aphid prefers certain Gramus genera. Sorghum is number one. Many species, and I'm guessing probably the entire genus, since the genus is highly heterozygous. Second two preferences are Miscanthus and Penicetum, several species. And if you remember from earlier, Penicetum, center of origin, and sorghum, center of origin, show that this haplotype must have adapted to whatever host it had available. The third one being the sugarcane line, and I will say that because it was an experimental line that was very susceptible. It was very rare in a sugarcane field to see haplotype A populations attacking any form of sugarcane. And this is from consultants and extensive scouting efforts. Several phylogenetically related grasses also served as temporary feeding sources, including Quinacloa, Brucarias, Urocloas from the tribe Panaceae, Phragmites and Arundo from the tribe Arundinae, which are very common globally in ditches, runoffs, weeds, fields. You may know brown top millet and rough barnyard grass are good examples. Other significant outcomes for haplotype A, based on our no choice results so far, more than 30 grasses are not hosts. I ran into these many grasses because I wanted to determine mechanisms which this pest had no problem with. We can clearly rule out many local grasses and many common weeds within our fields. I'll give you a second to take a look over that. I know this is a cotton group, but I've always been a grass guy. These grasses can be continually tested. I like to keep populations of grasses in my greenhouse going and just randomly throwing aphids on them and see what they do. And then from there, I'll take it and put it into a formal test if needed. I will be probably testing grasses until I finish with my PhD. So by the end of this, I hope to have a very extensive list. I'd like to acknowledge everyone who helped make this possible. First off, Louisiana Soybean Grain Research and Promotion Board. I secondly would love to thank the U.S. Cotton Incorporated, Bayer, Monsanto, those who put this together and invited and opened up this format to insects and pests other than cotton. It was very nice to be able to come here and be amongst others that might include sorghum in the rotation and give us important information. Secondly, I'd like to thank the bug crew at the Macon Ridge Research Station. It's a wonderful place to conduct research, and I was very fortunate to be there. I would like to also thank all the contributors to my research into germplasm, into populations, and guiding me along my way, including my committee. I thank you very much. For those of y'all who asked about it at the Sugarcane Research Exchange meeting, here are pictures of the oviparity, which we induced in the growth chambers, showing some of the eggs that were laid. With that, I'll take your question.
Yes. Okay, if you have more questions for Greg, you can talk. This is the last talk in the session, so you can take it up with him. Thank you very much.